Blog Talk Radio.
Like a dying breed.
Where have all the charming men gone?
Where have they gone? Once their ranks were many. King Arthur and his noble court. Alexander the Great. Leonardo da Vinci.
But every time I turn around, all I see is just guys being inconsiderate.
I want an old-fashioned gentleman. Where can I find one?
Where have the gentlemen gone? Some say they are lost forever, casualties to the ravages of time, relics of ages past, never to be seen again by mortal eyes.
It shouldn't just be something that has happened in the 60s and the 70s, but something that should happen forever.
Oh, the humanity!
But hope is not lost. A wind rises in the cycle of time, and in the ceaseless circle of life. What is lost may yet
a day may come when the courage of men fails, when we forsake our friends and break all bonds of fellowship.
But it is not this day.
Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
A man rises to fill the void, and he is the modern gentleman.
We all have a great need for acceptance. You must trust that your beliefs are unique, your own, even though others may think them odd or unpopular, even though the herd may go, that's bad.
Join us. Join the revolution. Join the Society of Modern Gentlemen.
I, Ashton Shreve, your Modern Gentleman of the Evening, Modern Gentleman Monday, on the Modern Gentleman radio show program. I just realized that was a lot of Modern Gentlemen, so I should probably cut that back. I am very highly untrained and dysfunctional, yet I will be your host, and we'll have a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us. Last week, we had tons of, oh my gosh, it was the most guests we've ever had on a radio show. And I was, to be honest, prior to the show, I was a little nervous. I thought, you know, having this many people, we're going to be talking over each other. How are we going to do it? You know, people from all over the country and the world even. And but it came up really well. We got a lot of great feedback. Thank you for that. Really enjoyed myself with everybody. But I did make you a promise. And the promise that I made last week, because of the fact that we were so tied up into – you know, the crazy amount of guests that we had, was that I would eventually get to your emails and stuff. So I want to make sure that I do that first, because the Modern Gentleman does keep his promises. So we do have, a really interesting email here, actually, that asks, Ashley, you have traveled everywhere. Where are the greatest cities that you have met women? Now, I haven't traveled everywhere. I've been a lot of places. I'm not gonna lie, but I haven't traveled everywhere. But there, to be honest with you, it I don't know how to explain it to you. It doesn't really. It's, I could say go to a city with a population of 7 million people because no matter what, somebody's gonna talk to you. Like we could go down that route. But honestly, what it comes down to, David, by the way, is what you're interested in. You know what I mean? So for example, if you're not interested in party girls, don't go to Vegas, or prostitutes for that matter. If you don't like people that are very centered and about nutrition and yoga and meditation and Eastern medicine and finding themselves and being self-sufficient and all these things, don't go to South Florida. You know what I mean? So if you have a laid-back lifestyle because you lived in the South, for example, New York City, which, to be honest with you, nobody really calls it New York City, but New York is not going to be for you because everybody has a New York minute mindset, unless they're, of course, a tourist, in which case you're not going to get very much of an interaction out of a few days out of there. So, you know, it really depends. You have to, I can tell you from traveling, I've had amazing experienced many different cultures, Louisiana, for example, completely different. Texas, for example, completely different. Wisconsin, different, right? So the thing is I've been able to experience amazing things and take away little things from each of these places that I've been and met some great, great people. But I can't just say this is the best or easiest place to pick up girls. I mean, if you're just looking to go to a, some kind of college, like week-long party or something, spring break, I can suggest some places where girls might be easy or easier, but I'm not necessarily sure if that's what you're looking for. I mean, he actually, to be honest with you guys that are listening in, he had a little bit extra that he wrote in here, and more or less he's looking to move. And the thing is I think when you're looking to move, when you're trying to make a serious decision besides a vacation, obviously, there needs to be a little bit more substance to, can I get laid in the town? The truth is you can get laid in any town. Pretty much the basis and premises of the modern gentleman. However, true question is finding the town that you finally feel like you're home for the first time. That's the key. So, and we'll move on to the next one. So the next one is Ashley is the biggest moron I've ever heard on radio. And that was written into ashleyisaphony@moderngentleman.com. And I just want to say thank you, actually, for writing in. For a while there, we ran into a lull. And for those of you who do not know, ashleyisaphony@moderngentlemansociety.com is a public service that we do for everybody that is like really pissed off at the world, just hates the world. It's an opportunity for them to be able to take their angst out on me instead of going postal in their work or their school or whatever. And I will take all of the blame and all of the hatred. I'm glad and happy to do that. So I'm glad that you think I'm a moron. Thank you for writing. Please continue to write. And if you absolutely hate me, have a bitch, gripe, complain, something like that, write into ashleyisaphony@moderngentlemansociety.com. And we'll be sure to make sure everybody hears your voice and how much of a loser I am. So that's enough from the email tonight. Now listen, tonight we have a really interesting guest. We've changed things up a little bit. Normally I try to bring in, like last week we had our big power panel and we talked about men and this, that, and the other thing, but I wanted to change things up, and that's something that is always very unique about our program, as many of you do know. So, we're not very niche-y anymore, right? So we don't just focus on dating or anything else like that. We try to bring in all kinds of different aspects and men from different walks and cultures of this world, and really just try to give many of you who haven't had the opportunity to travel, as I have, as mentioned before, to kind of experience that, to indulge in that, to understand different mindsets, different cultures, and what it's like, And I know many of us do wonder that. That's why, shows like Kim Kardashian are so popular. And boom, did it again. Literally cannot go an episode without trash talking Kim Kardashian to date. So my record still stands. But my point is that people love kind of feeling like they're able to dabble in a lifestyle that they'll never be able to experience. Now, that goes completely against what I believe and what we teach here at the Modern Gentleman Program, because we believe that you can experience any lifestyle that you feel is a lifestyle that you want. You just need the right guidance. However, while you're waiting, while you're working towards that goal, we will bring you in some amazing experts, some people from all around the world, And tonight is bar none, nothing shy of an expert in his field. And let me tell you what he does. So our gentleman guest tonight is a comedian. And he is the first comedian that we're bringing on the radio program. And he happens to be a pretty swell guy. But this is why I thought it was interesting. This is what I want to talk to him about. I'm going to pick his brain. I don't even know if he knows what he's into, and you guys know me. But we're going to get interesting. Because the thing is I was toying with the idea with a comedian, and I realized, what do comedians do? Well, they're trained in improv. They're trained in making people laugh. They're trained in all kinds of things that are stuff that we try to teach people anyway, right? So these guys, it's almost natural to them. They understand social science. They understand how to make people laugh and how to motivate people and timing and cues and all these amazing things. And what I want to do is I want to pick this gentleman's brain and get all the gems out of it that I can, out of all the years of his experience, expertise, and what's made him be the star that he is today, and try to give you guys a few gems that you can take to the workplace tomorrow, that you can take out to the bar tomorrow night when you're trying to talk to a pretty lady, or anything of that nature. But either way, it's going to be interesting, it's going to be different, but it's going to be really great. Without further ado, let me bring on my guest.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yeah, Ashley, I just wanted to tell you, haters are life's way of telling you that you're doing something worth doing. I heard that call earlier. I heard that letter earlier.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, to be honest with you, I don't pay them as much tribute as I should. I mean, when I do these shows, barely even get to the emails. By the way, I apologize to everybody for that. But I really barely get to the hate mail. And I actually get about twice as much hate mail as I do fan mail. And, you know, the thing is it's not because I'm scared and I don't want to talk about it. But it's just, you know, there's a certain thing about having a successful mindset, a successful life, a successful culture, right? Because there's so many people that see Facebook, and they're like, they see a meme, and it, like, resonates with them. They're like, yeah, that's me. Well, I think about working out, where people are like, yeah, I'm going to work out. Yeah, I'm going to quit smoking. Like, whatever. They see it, they like it, they share it, and everything else, but that's as far as it gets. And so the thing is that, you know, it goes way beyond that, right? It's something that you embody. It's a culture that you develop when you want to be successful or whatever. So with me and my successful mindset, it's like the last thing on my mind, honestly, truthfully, is that, like, oh, my God, I created this thing for hate mail. I should go check that inbox, you know? And so it's like, holy crap, it's like the radio show is about to go. I got to pay some patronage to my haters. So let me pull up the email, read the first one I see, and that's about as far as honestly, it's a failure of mine. I've got to get a little bit better, give these guys a little more credit, because believe me, there's a lot of people that hate me out there. But
they care too much.
You know, it's interesting because we talk about, you know, investment and stuff in the Modern Gentleman program. So the thing is like the old reference that I use is Coca-Cola, which you're from Canada, so you're familiar with Coca-Cola, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah, we have that up here.
Okay, so in America, Coca-Cola is as big as a staple as Budweiser or the flag or, you know, I mean, it's just, it is America, period. And but they still run advertisements, right, all the time. They run advertisements and on commercials and stuff. So it's like, why do they do that? And I remember years and years ago when I was a kid, I used to wonder to myself when they do the, like, Coca-Cola Polar Bears commercials at Christmas. I'm like, why do they do this? Like, obviously people know what Coca-Cola is. You don't have to tell us. But I've learned later that, you know, the more you see something, the more you're familiar with it, the more you're familiar with it, the more – you know, you feel comfortable, and when you go to the store and you see something that, you know, you feel comfortable and feels like home to you because you're familiar with it, you've seen it forever, you know, the more you're attracted to it. And that has a lot to do with investment. And so my point is that it's an interesting topic that you bring up, because someone that takes the amount of time to not only listen to the show, but then go write me an email to tell me I'm a moron. I mean, believe me, some of them get really, really detailed. Some of them get – people told me they're going to fuck my wife, my sister, my mom. I mean, it gets crazy. But the amount of investment that they spend
you know, into writing me that email after listening to my radio show, it's like, you know, they
it's
must really like me. I mean, they must
they
really
a
like
lot of
me.
Attention.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It's, you know, I can't be perfect at everything, and I damn sure don't have the answer for that. But my guess is that they secretly like me. Either that, or they're the profile of somebody that should be turning into the FBI. Either way, I'm not sure. But, so you're calling me from Canada, by the way. Congratulations on figuring out how to make that work. And and how's the weather up there? Is it still cold? I always wondered. I see, my thing is when I go to Toronto or Montreal or someplace, I always try to wait till like the middle or end of the summer where I don't have to be like below ground. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? It's actually kind of beautiful right now. I'm actually speaking to you from outside. And the other thing about that is this year, actually, in at least in my part of the woods here at London, Ontario, we actually only had 3 weeks of snow. I'm going to thank global warming for that, but it was actually pretty great.
Really? Well, let me thank global warming, because we've had one of the coldest winters ever. So, you know, it's just, you know, matter of fact, just not to get completely off topic, but this really cracked me up, was they were having a global warming conference in D.C.
Yeah.
And they had to cancel the conference because there was like 8 foot of snow. Like, they literally had to cancel it. And I'm just like, you know, honestly, it's just like anything else. You know, we, as humans, especially as men, as masculine energies, right, we want to be very concise. We need to have a reason for things. That's why we feel like, you know, we've got to identify ourselves and identify others and put people in boxes and stuff. Like, we have to make everything make sense so we feel better. And I feel like, you know, with global warming, it's just like we come out with some facts and we're like, okay, it all makes sense now. We put it in the box. But then crazy shit happens, like, you know, we have record breaking cold spells or, you know, whatever. Like, some parts of the earth are getting warmer, but other parts are getting insanely colder. And it's like, so I think at the end of the day, you know, nobody really knows shit. We're just guessing. Like, you know, and it's just like anything. Like, in America, of course, we have, you know, two major parties where politics are concerned, right? The Democrats and the Republicans. It's like both of them think the other ones are completely wrong. Well, global warming, you have scientists saying that global warming's bad, and you have other scientists saying it's a hoax. So it's like, you know, at the end of the day, it's just like, does anybody really know what's going on? You know, it's just,
no,
it's,
well,
I don't know, it's
interesting. I was going to say, well, think about it in terms of your hater. Your hater earlier, who was saying all those nasty things to you, they found your thoughts so repugnant, let's say, that they felt that they needed to do something. They needed to try to stop you in some small way. It's like, why? They just wanted to censor you, because at the bottom line of those fears, they're scared of the truth. And that truth scares them, and they need to figure out a way to hide from that truth and hide others from that truth, because what happens if that truth is revealed? Then all of a sudden, their wall of lies come down, and they can't deal with that. As opposed to just giving in and being fair, being honest about things.
No, that's beautifully said. And as you were saying that, me and my ADD mind just brought me to the most random thing ever. But do you know there's a movement right now of people that actually believe the Earth is really flat and the whole thing about it being round is a conspiracy?
Yeah, there's a rapper named B.O.B. who made a rap song about it. And then, you know, I assuming you knew Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Right.
His cousin or nephew actually wrote a rap song in reply to this rapper who made a song about how the Earth is flat.
Really?
It's so amazing what silly people can get up to given enough time.
No, it's literally mind-blowing. And, like, the thing is, you know, it's, I feel like, along with what you said, which is extremely accurate, but I also feel like it goes a lot further. You know, I feel like, well, first of all, I feel like we live in a generation, right, where everybody feels the need to be famous or important, or that their voice matters and everybody needs to hear it. And I blame Facebook for that. But, you know, the truth is so everybody needs to have some kind of a, you know, it's, whether it's a special interest group that they stand up for, you know, it could be like global warming, it could be animals, it could be the lesbian, gay, like, it doesn't matter what it is. Everybody has to have some kind of a cause, right? Everybody has to have a very strong opinion that everybody needs to hear, and everybody thinks that their voice matters, which is really interesting, because if you look at the black culture, And if you look at our culture years and years ago, they have a different mentality, right? Their mentality is mind your business. That's none of your business. Like, you know, stay in your own lane, do your thing, mind your business. But now it's like everybody feels like, oh, I can be the next Kim Kardashian. I can, you know, I can, if I get 1,000 more followers or whatever, I'm important. People like what I say. But really all that does is perpetuate their insecurity, I believe.
No, it's like my thought is always like, what will happen when Instagram models learn to think? Because at the end of the day, right, like their idea is like, oh, they're selling themselves. And what are they selling? Obviously they're selling sex, they're selling their bodies, they're selling their looks. But at the same time, it's like, when are they going to sort of come to the point where, like, look, your looks aren't going to last. They should know that, and it's not going to hold out forever. You can work out as much as you want, but eventually things are going to start to go down south. So it's like when things like that start to happen, then they have to re-decide their assets, right? They have to figure out where they're going to go from there. But they don't have to make that move yet, so they're free to stay in the same thought.
Absolutely. And I've met plenty of like ex-Playboy models that have gotten a little too old. Or, you know, you can have girls in Vegas that are, escorts or call girls or whatever. But these girls, they've spent their entire life based off of being gorgeous and getting money. So, for example, Playboy models. I know for a fact, I'm not going to name names, but I know people that I've been there and I've seen the checks come in the mail and with a letter that's like from a different country, and it's like, pick out whatever ring you want, blank check, right? And the girls just cash the checks, and that's how they make a living. And and that's literally their entire life plan. But then they, like you said, then they get to the point where they're in their 40s, they're in their 50s, whatever. And, you know, it's like they'll get the occasional guy that remembers them from when they were young too, when they're a little bit older. But they're having problems with their own self-identity because they don't even really know who they are anymore. And I call it the Justin Bieber effect, because you see it with child stars, right? So what happens is, like, you see with Justin Bieber, you see it with Miley Cyrus, you see it with Britney Spears, you see it with all these kids. So they go through puberty or whatever it is. They're not really getting cast. Their entire self-identity is based off of their ego, you know, and their validation from other people telling them, like, yay, you're good, like, we love you, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, they don't come out with a hit song. They don't know what the hell is going on, and they're doing anything radical and crazy that they could possibly do just to stay in the tabloids, for Christ's sakes. You know, and you see this with these females, and they're getting older, and it's like they don't know what to do. They spent all the money that they got because they thought the checks were just going to keep coming. You know, now they're looking at these younger girls that are taking – go ahead.
No, their social capital has just been erased, right? They relied on their good looks for so long. They have no way to adapt to the current circumstances. I'm not a gorgeous girl who everything's going to be paid for, or I'll be let into the clubs. Like, there are always three people in an owner's box. There's the owner, there's like the best person at his company, and then there's just some random hot chick. Well, it's like the guy who works at his company, he worked really hard to get those seats. The owner owns the company. He paid for those seats. How'd that other person get there? Because they were hot. Like, what happens when you're not hot anymore? That's when you gotta learn to adapt.
Right,
but it might be too late
with someone that's hot. Right,
exactly.
And the problem is honestly, now this is the entrepreneur in me. So if I was one of those girls, I'd come out with a tell-all, like what it was like to be a call girl, how my whole life has changed, like teaching women to be better and getting an education. Like, I'd come out with a book, it'd be a bestseller, whatever. That's what I would do. But most of these girls, to be honest, and it's not to knock women. I love women, believe me. But the problem is,
me too.
Is like you said, you know, they come out of high school and this is automatically what they're doing. They don't really have that education. You know, they're just completely lost. They don't know where to go. It's kind of a nightmare. And you can actually identify a lot of these. Like when you go out, like you could see the cougars that are still out that are just, you know, put way too much time into their, you know, they should be owning who they are, but instead they're still trying to be even more plastic or fake because they're trying to hang on to that path.
Mm-hmm. No, it's. I remember a long time ago, I went to this fair, and they had a bikini contest, and they had about 8 really young, very beautiful girls, and they had this one sort of older girl there. She used to be a stripper, and like she still was pretty, but you could see it on her face that she was like, I don't belong here, and you could see her confidence sort of shrink her inward, and her shoulders come down, and her face sort of start to look down, and she's like laughing nervously because she knows like she's not going to win this contest. She knows in her brain that, like, none of the things are going right where before it would. And the things that put her on that stage, the confidence that she had before that from maybe her boyfriend or whoever telling her she's beautiful and winning those contests probably in the past were not the same as the actual moment of truth where she had to realize, like, look, I'm not like these other girls. Not that I wasn't or not that I couldn't be, but right now in this moment, I have to face that. And she couldn't deal with that embarrassment. She ran off the stage.
That's so amazing that you bring that up. And I've known plenty of strippers, models, whatever, and I've seen this transformation. It's really interesting because at a young age, 18, 19, 20, 23, whatever, these girls think they own the world. And if an average guy were to walk up to them and try and give them a conversation, they're better than them. They're automatically judging you for your status. How much money do you make? You know, how are you going to sugar baby me? This, that, and the other thing. This is their mindset. When they get to the age that you're talking about, it's amazing how that transforms, and they're just so grateful that someone's, you know, kind of like entertaining them and still making them feel that kind of special. But it's different because with men, it shifts. So with men at a young age, we're used to, like, you know, being rejected and blah, 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 blah. But then we get a little bit older, you know, we get the Dos Equis guy, maybe a little salt and peppered out and shit. And it's amazing how that paradigm just completely shifts socially, you know?
Oh yeah, my favorite comedian, Patrice O'Neill, he has this sort of great joke, or more of a story, where he talks about, it's like, for guys, it's like we have to look good, we have to dress good, we have to be smart, we have to make money, we have to have a nice car, we have to have a nice house, we have to do all these things. But it's like if you're an attractive girl, we don't really care what you don't care if you're a waitress, we don't care if you're like look at Tiger Woods, he didn't care if you were a waitress at Denny's, all those things. It's like, baby, we don't even care. Like, baby, can you read? We don't ask you those questions. We don't give a shit. We're just like, you are hot, and I want that at the time, right? And then after a while, like, well, if that one thing that you had that we needed goes, it's like, well, then what's our real impetus to stay with you? Because it's not that we got along, you had a great conversation with me, you have an amazing personality, you're funny, we have similar interests, those things. It was never that. It was just like, look, you have physically the things I want, and I have, like, financially or emotionally or motivationally the things you want. And it's like when that exchange is over, one party feels much more like one party feels like they're losing something. Like in a divorce, most women come into court and think to themselves like, well, I'm entitled to all this and I'm going to get all this stuff. And the reality is like they will if they've earned nothing the entire time. But if they've earned something similar, then they might end up paying or they might end up getting way less than they expect. But they feel like they're entitled to all those things. And that also carries over to the relationship, right? Like if you just got into the relationship because you're hot, well, when you ask for money for new purses, when you ask for money to go out and get your makeup done, when you go out to do your nails and those things, and you ask him for money and he's always provided that, then you're always sort of, you're like, okay, then I deserve these things. But when those things stop coming, you don't know how to react because you've never had to be there before.
Right. And the thing is like, it's a lot of the problems with the millennials right now. So looking at the millennials and many of them are living, you know, with their parents still and things like that. So granted, there's a whole topic that we talked about the education bubble and all this other kind of stuff. But truly, what I've learned is that a lot of people, my generation, a little bit older, you know, we grew up with, we were broke. We had nothing. So you want to give your kids everything that you never had. And that was the whole, like, mentality for years and years and years. It's like you want to build a better life so your kids had a better life than you did. But now what's happening, you're seeing with these kids, besides all the social programming and everything else that they're getting, but what you're seeing is the fact that they're being given everything and they haven't ever had to earn anything, and so far they don't actually appreciate anything. They have no idea about the concept of money. They have no idea what it is to work hard for something, and when you finally earn it, to take care of it and appreciate it because you know how hard you had to work for it. You give these people, you know, all kinds of stuff for free, and they have no respect for it. It's broken, you know, 2 days later or whatever because they have no concept. And so I think what you're saying, you know, really kind of parallels with that. And it's honestly sad, but you see it kind of socially across the whole broad spectrum, right? I mean, it's not just women. It could be men too, you know, and it's kind of scary, honestly, where we're going, you know, socially with everyone. And then what you see is the next thing is everyone's crying and screaming because, you know, it's like they, like you said, they feel so entitled. They feel like they're owed. And when they don't get it, it's like when it used to be a mentality, like, you know what, you can be the best of whatever you want to be. All you got to do is go out there and work for it. Now the mentality is like, well, why is it just not given to me? And yeah, you know, it's just interesting. And it's interesting how that, you know, translates into relationships and social interactions. And you had brought up some really interesting points. So you brought up, you know, I'm a man, I'm a provider, I'm a protector, I'm, you know, all these things. You're a woman, you're beautiful. But I really don't want to get into, like, shame detail on the modern gentleman and how that interaction is completely different. But a lot of people do believe that. You know, a lot of guys think, oh, I just need to get on roids, or I need to get, you know, the nicest, fanciest car. And that stuff does stick out to females, obviously.
Absolutely.
It does stick out,
well,
to all their peers.
Well, what's kind of occurred to me with comedy, actually, and is that at first I thought it was kind of going to be like the musician sort of effect. Like, they see me on stage, I'm doing really well, and they're going to want to sleep with me or fool around and stuff. And to some degree, that can be true. But at the same time, I'm a little older now, and that doesn't necessarily appeal to me to win me. Like, it would be great. And I've had those times. I went to university. I went to college after that. I had a pretty great life. But at the same time, like, what appeals to me now is someone who can hold up a conversation, someone who is out there making their own money, or someone who is out there who actually, like, has an interesting point of view, who makes me want to sit down and continue talking to them. Because I've had enough dates where in the middle of it, I'll pretend I have to go to the washroom, and then I'll get the hell out of there. And
at this point
now, you sort of want to see those different games. That's what happens as you get older, at least for me.
Well, a lot of things different have happened, right? So, first of all, the population is a lot bigger. We have Tinder. We have all kinds of things. So where people realize they have a lot more options, that's first of all. Second of all is the fact that women have been demanding these rights for years and years and years, and you're finally going, you know what? Like, men went through this transformation where at first they were like, bullshit, women should be at home, they should be in the kitchen. And now they're starting to realize, you know, that's not that bad, because I want a woman that's like-minded like me. I want a woman that's just as motivated as me. I want a woman that isn't wondering why I'm not calling every 2 minutes, because she's out worrying about making herself successful, you know, and all these different things. So there's a lot of really great shit that comes with that. And a lot of people that are older,
absolutely,
like you and me, who, you know, aren't 21 and just looking to fuck anything that happens to be in the room, you know, because, I mean, we've all been there. We all, you know, went through puberty.
Absolutely.
And we're like, oh, my God, women. But when you get past that, absolutely. And I've had, you know, I was just in Hollywood. I think it was last week? No, 2 weeks ago, right? And the thing was every girl out there is plastic, you know, every girl's. And so, you know, they're all going, but look at me, and flipping their hair and this. And I'm going, so what? Like, literally, like, there's, if you literally think about it, let's say there's 8 billion people on the planet now. Half of them are women. That's 4 billion women. Let's say half of them are married. Let's say half of them are too old. We can go on all day long. Still, at the end of the day, when there's still hundreds of millions of women that are my exact type. Like, so, and I'm a picky motherfucker. So at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, it's like, you got to be bringing something else, because look, you know, and now I'm not going to lie. I've kind of landed myself one that I'm pretty happy with, and I've been with her for a
beautiful
while.
And happy for you.
Great. Yeah, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. It really is. But the truth is that, you know, this is the mentality, though, that people have. And they're like, oh, but I'm pretty. I had a guy, I was talking with a gentleman earlier today, and he just moved to Vegas. And he was telling me some of the struggles in Vegas, you know, like every woman's a prostitute, this, that, and the other thing. But he brought up a really interesting conversation. I mean, really, really, really interesting shit. And so he was out, and a girl was out, and she had a drink. She was drinking solo. She saw him. Second he touched her, then she, like, you know, initiated him to buy a drink, which is not that crazy. I've known tons and tons of women that have gone downtown with $5 in their pocket, and that's for the Uber ride home, because they planned on, you know, having dudes buy them drinks all night. I mean, that's not a new thing. What was really interesting about that conversation? Go ahead.
The one thing that really sort of changed my perspective, especially going into university. Let's say I was basically an innocent. I sort of thought, you know, girls are one way and guys are another, and we have to treat them beautifully because, like, that's how gentlemen work and all these things. Then I met this group of girls who actually would, like, I remember one of the first times, and it blew my mind. This girl and her group of four friends, love them to this day for this. They told me, look, if a guy is at a bar, he is fair game. I don't care if I know his girlfriend. I don't care if I know his wife. I don't care, whatever. He's at this bar for tonight. He's on the table. And I was like, that blew my mind, because I thought all girls were sort of these innocent princesses. And it sort of took away my sort of thoughts, where I was previously sort of inclined to be like, well, no, you can't do that. You can't do that to a lady. all those sort of smaller interactions. And it changed my whole brain. And I feel like a lot of guys sort of go through expecting women to sort of maybe live up to sort of the princess idea from Disney, where they feel like they're just quiet and they have gloves, they don't really talk to people, and they're looking for their Prince Charming. And that's not really the case.
Well,
and I feel like a lot of guys fall into that trap, and that's sort of what makes them nervous a lot of the time.
There's a lot of really interesting things here. So first of all, every man has their first love, right? And when every man has that first love, he immediately, or first infatuation, or multiple, but you get the point. But there's a stage in a man's life where he immediately goes to what he was programmed for. So he watched Disney movies. He knows what Prince Charming is like, this, that, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just speaking in general, not all men, but most men. So most men,
of course,
what they do is they try to do everything the right way, right? Tell her she's beautiful, mm-hmm. buy her flowers, you know, fucking like all the shit. Try to be the gentleman, like
open the door.
Right, exactly. But then they realize real quick, that's not real life. And they get labeled as, like, the nice guy. They get put in the friend zone, everything else. And then they go, what the fuck? Right? So then you got some guys that just turn completely misogynistic, you know, or just have this, you know, hatred towards women because they got cheated on. And they did everything they thought they were supposed to do and this, that, and the other thing. Or you have other guys that just, you know, turn into players. And, you know, and it's really interesting how that shifts. But I feel like all guys have that one girl that they could name that they're like, no, like, you know, this is my girl. Like, I tried to do everything the right way. And it could be sixth grade. It could be 12th grade. It could be college. You know, it's different for everybody. But everybody goes through that stage. And then they go through the second stage, which is like, fuck that. I'm just going to fuck everything. Women are objects. You know, and then at some point in time, you come to this crossroads where you're like, okay, I'm getting older. You know, I'm either going to give this another shot and try and find the one, or you just end up being 60 and single. And, you know, so it's really interesting, but it's, you know, and a lot of that is, like you said, you know, women feel like, you know, they're owed. There's this whole feminist movement. It's this whole, well, what is the guy going to, you know, what does he have to offer me, you know, and this, that, and the other thing. And, but it shifts. It completely shifts in older age. And it's, you know, it's just, it's amazing. Everybody in their life comes to some point of a reality check, whether it's you're 26 and you just had a heart attack, or your best friend just died, or, I mean, there's always a moment in somebody's life where they realize that they're human, you know, and they come to some kind of reality check and realize that, you know, life isn't perfect, that they've been socially programmed through the media, and that, you know, this is the reality of what life is. And most people, you know, feel like it sucks, you know, and,
no,
but the
absolutely.
Truth is, and this is what I want to talk to you about. I brought you in, you know, you're this comedian stuff, and this is kind of what I really wanted to get in with you. Along with, I want you to share some of your personal story. But a lot of people do feel like, you know, shit sucks. They're trapped, still in a small town. They're going to be working this job the rest of their life. But it is possible. I know I'm a living testament to it, and so are many of my clients, and this, that, and the other thing. But it is possible in this day and age to kind of take a risk on something that you love and actually break free of the shell or the mold that you were put in. And I think you're also a living testimony of that. I mean, you obviously weren't born a comedian, right? This is obviously something that you love, you enjoy.
Absolutely. Well, how about I start at the beginning? I was a university student, and I was very much like the innocent that I talked about. I would study all the time. I wouldn't go out and drink. I would just sort of, I just study, and I wanted to be a lawyer, and I had to make sure, I had to do everything in my power to make sure that that was a possibility, right? And
I love the
show suits. After a
while,
everyone loves the show suits. Great show. But for me, law was to some degree my first love, but at the same time, I sort of realized physically I was sort of, let's say, deteriorating. I would go to the gym and stuff, but not really enough to put in actual work. And I just watched, at the time, George St. Pierre fight Matt Hughes for the welterweight title. And in this fight, Matt Hughes is losing the entire time. He's the champion. And in the last second of the first round, he pulls off a spinning armbar to come back and win the fight altogether, making George St. Pierre tap. And I immediately thought to myself, like, I need to learn how to do this. I grew up in a relatively rough high school, and I talked shit. I love talking shit. Me and my friends would do it all the time. I didn't realize sometimes that people who don't like you don't necessarily like you to talk shit. But luckily, I had some friends that would back me up. But at the time, I was in university, and I realized, like, okay, well, what happens if this happens here? None of my friends are really in university, and they're definitely not going to back me up, so I got to learn to back me up. So I started MMA at that point. And MMA for me, for my friends, like, I was probably 6 feet tall, and I maybe weighed a 140 at the time. And I remember at the time for me, it was this really freeing thing. At first, especially in jiu-jitsu and MMA in general, you start by getting your ass kicked. You get your ass kicked every day you go into the gym, but you got to come back in there and be like, no, they taught me these techniques. I'm going to make them work. And eventually they start to work, and they slowly start to work, and they work more and more. And eventually you get to this point where you're not getting tapped out anymore. You're not feeling too much pain. You're getting the better of people most of the time. And I kind of fell into that. And I've been doing that. I've been doing that for a good 7 years, and I was finally asked to teach. And when I first started teaching, I was already kind of scared of public speaking. I would always joke around with my friends and stuff, but I wouldn't really joke around other people. I was very quiet and introverted. But teaching jiu-jitsu sort of got me out of my shell, because I had to teach these people how to defend themselves potentially in a life-threatening situation. And after a while, I sort of started to loosen up, and I would tell jokes as I was teaching people how to armbar each other, or choke each other out, or possibly break their legs, whatever that day orders, or maybe throw someone on their head. And after a while, I was sort of talking to myself. I was like, why aren't I doing comedy? I've always loved making people laugh. I know public speaking scared the shit out of me, but like I learned to face my fears of people choking me out constantly. Nothing is going to be that bad on stage. If they throw a bottle at me, which, by the way, on my first date at a comedy club, I saw this other comedian, Darren Frost, get a beer glass thrown at his head by a heckler, and I still knew I wanted to do it. So that's where the drive comes from. At the end of the day, you got to know you want something if you're going to do it. And to me, I got up the courage. I went up one night about 4 years ago now, and I ate shit. I'm not gonna lie to you. I ate a big bag of shit, and I thought to myself, like, well, no, not literally. That was not my act at the time. It would probably have been funnier than my act at the time. But the trick was, I thought in my brain, I was just like, well, I'm not Chris Rock. I might as well quit at this. But it took me years to not get choked out or armbarred or those things. It's like, so why was I assuming that comedy was going to be the same way? So after teaching for a little bit more time, I decided I would apply myself the same way I applied myself to jiu-jitsu, the same way I applied myself to school, the same way I applied myself to life generally, as opposed to just sort of thinking, like, I'm going to get this immediately. No one ever gets anything immediately. You have to put in that work every day, slowly get better, write your jokes, practice your arm bars, whatever it is. At the same time, I sort of slowly started to enter the world of comedy, and people – it took a 2-year hiatus, I guess, and I came back, and I realized, like, I'm going to have to put in those all the work, be in front of 4 people, be in front of 2 people, maybe it's no crowd, maybe it's just other comics, and they don't give a shit what you're saying, they're just thinking about their jokes and what they're going to say on stage, and maybe you have a good joke, but they hate you for that good joke, because they're like, oh, well, I wish I wrote that instead of this fucking idiot, and now I got to deal with people liking him because they think he's funnier than me, or whatever horse shit that comes from. And, sorry, am I allowed to swear on here? Am I allowed to swear on here?
What'd you say?
Hello? Am I allowed to swear on here? Am I allowed to swear?
Can you hear me? Yeah,
okay.
I can hear you fine.
Okay, perfect. So at the end of the day, I took those things and I applied myself, I applied my stories, I applied my life to comedy, and I found, and I shouldn't say I found, I keep finding that as the more I grow and the more I keep doing these things, the better it's been for my overall life. I'm not as worried necessarily in social situations, definitely not. I can be way more comfortable in front of a group of 4 people because I've been in front of a group of 100 people. And maybe they've loved my humor and maybe they've hated it. But at the same time, it's like I know what it's like to be on both ends of that, so the middle doesn't scare me anymore. And I feel like that's sort of the bigger thing for a lot of guys, where it's like in smaller social interactions. Again, I'm a confessed introvert. And a lot of it was just me being scared of sort of public social situations, larger groups of people. And comedy has definitely helped me get over that. It's made it easier for me to talk to people generally. And I feel like I'm a better person for it.
You know, there's so many different things I want to talk about. From what you said, I don't even know which direction to go. I'm going to – first, let me just start off and remind everybody that they can call into the radio show that we are live. And if you want to call in, the number is 657- 383-1820. Again, 657-383-1820.
to join the call for me. But there's two things I want to talk about. First, I want to start with the your kind of talk about this comedy and how it's changed you socially and everything. I think that's really interesting. And that at your core, what happens, right, is you become completely free from the outcome. You, like you literally said, you ate a bag of shit, so therefore you don't give a shit. You did it in front of 100 people, so you don't give a shit about 3 people anymore. So, you know, whether you realize it and realize the little nuances and things that you've changed, whether it's in, you know, your physical interaction, your tonality, your presence, whatever. But overall, and there's a million things that we get into in detail. I'm not going to dissect you, but I just think it just goes to prove the point that, you know, if you just go out and you're just out and having fun and you don't give a shit and you're not hung on the outcome like guys who are desperate and needy for that interaction to go really well, and it's just like, oh, but you know, we were talking for 5 minutes, so it's like, and they get clingy and they just like, you're trying and you're someone that just literally just doesn't care, as someone who's a comedian that's failed and bombed and you know, or has been successful.
Yeah.
when you learn that skill set, I think, you know, there's other aspects that transcend through that become very attractive to the other, to the opposite sex. But the other point that
Absolutely.
I want to get into, which is you talking about, you know, jiu-jitsu, which I did, by the way, I also did judo, fucking love judo.
Oh, nice.
Fucking love judo. Yeah, love it, love it, love
Great
it. Because
sport.
I did taekwondo, like, for example, I did taekwondo initially, and it was like, most of the time, it was just like, you know, if you could master, you know, the forms and shit, then you could get to, but it was like very little actual contact, you know, unless you went to some tournament or something. But with judo, every day, it's like, you know, it's just full on, it's a physical sport. And so I get it. I get where you're coming from. I was also in the military, went through basic training. I did a lot of things that have really humbled me, because when I thought I was the man, I thought I was this, you know, this young buck that was invincible, I got put in my fucking place. You know, and
yeah,
like you said,
important.
And you're faced into a situation where you can, you know, either accept the fact that you got put in your place, take the lessons from it, and come back and try and be better next time. And that's what's so beautiful about sports. Well, up until the
Absolutely.
Fact that they gave away participation trophies. Because prior to participation trophies, you know, it was like, oh, well, you lost because you sucked, but if you want a trophy, maybe you should fucking work at it and get better. That was the reality of the situation. But now it's like,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
My son, for example, you know, he was in wrestling. So we were at a match 2 years ago, and I'm like, I'm out like on the mats and shit, like warming him up, talking about his opponent. We're at this big tournament and everything. And I'm like, all right, you know, like, this is what this guy does. This is what you need to do, this, that, and the other thing. I'm trying to like get him all psyched up. He's next. And he just looks at me. He's like, Dad, like, when do I get my trophy so I can go home and play video games? I just want to be like, pop, you know, it's like, what? Get your mind in the game. But that's the problem. They don't have to work for anything anymore. But the point that I want to bring up is you went through a very similar experience, right? So whether it was, you know, through getting your ass beat in the ring
Absolutely.
Or getting your ass beat on stage, but you were able to be humbled and you were able to come to this point where you were able to, you know, see certain weaknesses and work towards, you know, excelling and getting better. But even more importantly was you developed a sense of mental toughness. So the thing is that when you're out with these interactions socially with people, right, you're more mentally tough.
Mm.
Like, you know, you can handle
yeah.
more. You know, you can push yourself farther. You know that you can get back in the ring again. And, you know, and that's
mm-hmm.
something that the military and the U.S. military, like, it's all about mental toughness. And same thing with
yeah.
sports, maybe not to the same degree, but there is points where I was like, you know, baby tears, and I was like, I literally can't do it anymore. And I've realized that mentally I was blocking myself from reaching what my body was actually capable of, you know, and I was able to achieve things that I never thought I could. And it's amazing that, you know, here you are going through something, maybe, you know, different circumstances, different sports, different life experiences, but as a man, you were able to get to that point, as I was, as many men are. But you don't really see that
Absolutely.
Anymore today. You know, you don't really
well, I was
see
say,
men.
You know Floyd Mayweather?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Floyd Mayweather's uncle, Roger Mayweather?
No, I do not.
Okay, in the first 24/7, he said something that I lived by. And it's like, people keep asking me, why does Floyd keep boxing? Yeah, well, I got a question for you. Why does Bill Gates keep making all them fucking computers? And to me, I was like, it represented the passion that he had, right? He wanted to, it doesn't matter. You could ask Floyd right now, is still in great shape. Why? He loves boxing before anything. And at the same time, he takes his passion very seriously. And in comedy, we don't make a ton of money up front, but like you have to follow that passion every day. You got to put that time in that gym to get those skills even 1% better. And every day, as you build those skills, eventually people sort of start to recognize that. But no one's going to care until you have the skill. And that's the thing I feel like a lot of people aren't really willing to work towards. Because, like you said, sort of the trophy culture that people deal with sort of accepts whatever amount of effort they're willing to put in, even if it's not necessarily the amount of effort that should be recognized. And I think that sort of becomes the problem a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah, that and the whole Kim Kardashian thing and the whole, like, you know, Facebook mentality where everybody's famous because they have a voice and everybody likes it. But, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, I completely agree with you. And as a comedian, I can only imagine because, I mean, you were really putting yourself out there. I mean, really putting yourself out there. And I can only imagine, as a comedian, and because I feel like, and tell me if I'm wrong, teach us, you know, but I feel like, you know, this is something that's very personal to you, very intimate to you, you know, these things that you've thought up in your own head, you're putting out there in the world to see whether they like it or not, you know, and if you're hearing crickets, go ahead.
No, well, that's the thing. No one would do what they love for money, or at least what you love shouldn't necessarily be driven by money. You should love what you're doing first, because then it won't feel like you're working, right? But at the same time, even when you first love something, like say for example, you love in college I really liked this girl, and I put all of my time, all of my effort. I was doing all these romantic things, and we hadn't been dating that long, and she cheated on me. And I thought to myself, like, why would she do this? I put in all this time. Well, it's like, well, my effort didn't necessarily mean anything to her, right? And if I'm putting a lot of effort into something and it's not yielding a reward, at a certain point, you sort of have to look at yourself and sort of decide, like, am I going to keep pushing forward despite sort of not necessarily getting the – in that case, it's not necessarily recognition, but at the same time, if someone isn't really caring for what you're doing, then you have to sort of take yourself out of that situation. With comedy – No one's going to tell you to keep going. No one's going to tell you that you're the best comedian of all time or those things, unless you're already like way past those sorts of levels. And it has to be something in you. The same way MMA had to be something in me, where I had to go to that gym every day and make sure that I was getting a little bit better at techniques and stuff. And there's still people at those gyms who could kick my ass absolutely all day. But at the same time, it's like I wanted it, and I had to be able to, I had to be willing to work for it. And it's the same thing with comedy. It's the same thing with any passion in your life. And if you're not willing to put in those hours, because, like, look, that girl maybe didn't appreciate me, but I got rid of that girl. MMA didn't necessarily need to appreciate me, but I kept working harder at it, and I got to a place where I was seeing a little bit of appreciation in those things. So at the same time, it's like, it's just where are you going to focus your efforts? For me, I decided that I'm going to follow my passions, even though I still work on the side, even though I'm still sort of doing other things. I know that if I don't follow my passion, I'll be, when I show up to work in the morning, I won't have as much energy, because going to work pays for my passion. And then when I go do comedy, I won't put time into writing, because if I'm not putting time into the, because if I don't put the time into the writing, then I won't get the result that I want. And that's why I keep working at the writing. Even when the jokes start out, not every joke is great. Some jokes suck, but maybe you have something there. Maybe you have a thought that you want to get out. And you sort of just keep chipping away at that sculpture until all you have left is David, right?
Well, the thing is first of all, everybody wants a return on their investment. Everybody. And,
sure.
I mean, it's just whether it's, you know, you're investing in the stock market and, you know, kind of goes back to my Coca-Cola speech. But it's like, you know, the more you're invested in it, the more you're attracted to it, because you've spent time of your life. Literally, the biggest commodity on the planet is your own personal time, because you're very limited into what that could be. And if you invest that into something, you want to make sure, damn sure, you're getting a return on that investment. And so to that extent, you know, it makes sense. But at the same time, you know, I hear so many people, and by the way, a lot of people don't even understand this. A lot of people do not know this, that the average millionaire has eight different streams of income. Eight.
Mm-hmm.
So
where a lot of people get knocked for having your day job and trying this other thing or trying something else, and they're like, oh, you're always on to the next new big thing or whatever. They get knocked for that. You know, they'll hear the stories about how Thomas Edison says he didn't invent the light bulb. He invented, you know, a thousand ways not to or whatever. But they'll hear the stories of other people that have made it. But they always want to just find out about the person that made it. They don't want to hear about the, you know, the struggle. But it's those same people also that won't try those eight different streams of income to make themselves a millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, because they just think it's that one thing. But more importantly,
absolutely,
is going back to what you're saying about personal dedication and motivation. But a lot of it, like you were mentioning, I believe, has to do with that strength, that motivation, that desire, that willpower comes from being aligned perfectly with what you believe your passion and your purpose is. So, for example, I just watched a movie yesterday, Flyboys. I love everything about aviation. Love it. I grew up flying airplanes. I just bought one actually a few months ago. Love it. Fucking love it. So I watched this movie. It's called Flyboys. And anyway, it was about the greatest generation, you know, World War One, the Great War, the first fighter pilots ever, this, that, and the other thing. But there was a gentleman on that radio show, and his father was very, very well-to-do. And, you know, it was a prime example of a lot of people that try to dabble in something that they're interested in, but it's not what their parents tell them to do. You know, their parents think, oh, well, I just watched the show Rounders earlier today, actually. And in that, a man talks about how for generations upon generations, his father's fathers were always rabbis. And at 12, he was supposed to be like the best rabbi known to man, but he wanted to be a lawyer. And he was like excommunicated from the family for that. And so
I love Rounders.
You know, what a great movie. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Incredible movie. I watch it every time I feel a little blue.
So many Matt Damon movies are absolutely on point. Good Will Hunting being another one. But the
absolutely.
I haven't seen it in like 20 years. I just happened to see the DVD laying around. I was like, yes, you know what? I'm eating lunch. I'm taking a long lunch. I'm watching this movie. And I'm glad it did because, you know, it reminded me of that, you know, where this gentleman was like, oh, I wanted to be a lawyer. I got excommunicated from my family. So you find people that find themselves in those situations as well, where it's like, well, you know, I can lose the support of my family because I'm expected to do this. But everybody always seems to be tied to something. But what happens is that most people, they do what they think they should do, or they think what they think they want or whatever, and they get there and they're not making it. They're not successful. They don't have that passion. They don't have that drive. And then they blame that on themselves. And when in all reality, is if they were to take some time, align themselves, discover their true purpose, align their – and then what I get a lot from clients is people say, well, how am I supposed to do that? Because now I'm supposed to be supporting this family. I got this career. I can't just go traveling the world. No, maybe you can't do it tomorrow. But the average millionaire has 8 streams of income. And every entrepreneur works more hours than anybody else on the planet. And so the thing
is –
yeah, so if you set aside your Netflix binge-watching time, you know, every week and pick up something else, you know, you could start to work in that direction. And honestly, like you had said, it's not going to be work anymore because it is going to be something that you are truly in alignment with. You are grounded. This is your purpose. You know, your whole passion, your everything shines through, and it's not going to seem like work. But I feel like a lot of people really miss that connection. Obviously, this is something that you found, you know, with your comedy through the story that you told, and obviously it's working really well for you.
No, I feel like a lot of people want things to come very easy. And it's like, it'd be great if things, like if I was born and then I had LeBron's genetics and I was that big, that'd be great. I could probably play basketball pretty well, but I wasn't born with those genetics, and I got to do what only I can do to sort of make it in my way. He's doing the same. Just because it was easy for him, and that's fine. It's not, it's easy for him, but it's not going to be easy for everyone. And I'm fine taking the hard road. It's just, you have to be fine taking the hard road. A lot of people are too happy to just be like, oh, well, instead of reading a book that's going to help them sort of move forward in their career or push their goals or whatever, they're just happy to lay down on their couch and pass out after work, right?
I'll drive 200 kilometers in the opposite direction
just to do one 10-minute spot because I love doing comedy and I'm not going to get any further by falling asleep on my couch.
No, that's absolutely correct. And so here's the thing. So multiple times you've done comedy
and multiple times you failed at comedy. But you didn't necessarily do it to please the people there. You did it because you enjoyed doing it. Am I wrong or am I right?
For my own personal growth. At the end of the day, nothing's going to change unless you change it, right? And for me, I was sort of going through this point in my life where I sort of realized I was going after other people's dreams for me as opposed to my own dreams for myself. And I needed to change that about myself if I wanted to really sort of start to enjoy my life and stop being necessarily like this sort of introvert. It's easy to be an introvert when you have nothing to talk about. It's hard to be an introvert when you have a lot of things that you're passionate about, because then you want to tell the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know what the most attractive thing to women is passion. And, you know,
Absolutely.
They want to see a man that has drive, that has passion, that is not. And so if you're an introvert, you know, and it just goes back to show the whole core basis of the Modern Gentleman program. The reason why we start with everything, and sorry, I don't mean to just sit here and plug this, but it's like, I feel like this is a really good example, is to, you know, it's to get down to the reason why we're different. We don't have a cookie cutter program or a magic pill that you swallow or any kind of shit like that. We figure out who the fuck you are, and we help you figure out who the fuck you are, because most people don't even know how to do that. You know, most people, they'll sit down, and it's really interesting. What we do is we do an exercise, right, where I say, like, what is your passion? And it's really interesting that shows it. So most people will write down, like, what is your purpose in life? And somebody will be like, oh, you know, to be rich. And they'll be very vague, or, oh, to be famous, or, oh, to have a good family. And what you see is the first few answers, and they'll answer it, and I'll say, okay, and I'll regurgitate the question. And we'll go through this, and sometimes it could be a couple hundred times. But what you see is the first few answers are all social programming, right? It's like, oh, what GQ says, oh, what the movies say, what my father told me. And then it starts to get a little bit more specific. Right, then it gets a little more specific. And then at some point in time, it gets emotional. And they are able to re-identify, you know, as children, like, you know, people wanted to be an astronaut or the president of the United States. You know, nothing, there is absolutely nothing that held us back from our imagination and what we wanted to be until we got kicked. We got picked last for the kickball team, until we didn't get the blue ribbon for our fucking art painting in elementary school or whatever. And we start to be trained that we suck at shit, you know, or no, you can't have that, or no, you're not good enough.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense to me. Like, I feel like a lot of people are too quick to sort of give up. That makes sense. I see it all the time with, especially back in the jiu-jitsu days. Most beginners will sort of tap a lot faster than they will, only because they're unaware of the position that they're in. They're panicked because they're in a place that they don't sort of understand. And I feel like a lot of people do that in life, right? Because to go somewhere or to do something you've never done, you got to go somewhere you've never been, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And another thing that I think we haven't mentioned yet, which is extremely critical, is that most people are scared to death that if they were to step out, make a decision, make a statement, go against the grain, whatever, that their entire life, their entire community, their whole social circle is going to judge them. And the truth is, and our listeners really need to listen to this, because this is the truth. The truth is as a man, which is very hard to do, by the way, but if you're a man and you're like, you know what, I hate my life, or I could do better, or I need to improve myself in this area, or whatever. First of all, just admitting that is fucking huge for a man to do. But if you do that, and then you go out and you try to seek help, or you try to seek guidance, and whether it's a life coach, a dating coach, whatever the fuck it is, it could be a comedian coach, whatever, and you try to improve yourself in a certain aspect of your life, yes, you're going to run into all kinds of people that are going to tear you down. But instead of realizing that these people are tearing you down because you suck, the truth is these people are really tearing you down because they're looking at their own lives and realizing that they are too lazy to do anything with their own lives, that it's easier to knock you down back to their level to where they just feel like it's even and it's okay than to see you rise as a star or rise as an individual and have to look at themselves and realize that they're not going to do anything to make their lives better. And that makes them feel shitty. So they take it out on you. And a lot of people don't realize that when their friends do this, you know, they're like, the whole hater thing, it really is a thing.
because you know, these people just want to – it's easier to knock you down than for them to bring themselves up.
You know? Absolutely. I have a friend who always sort of – he would always say the same thing. Like, I remember back in the day when I was going to university, I had this one friend who became a stand-up comic, great friend of mine. His name's Jeff Leeson. And he was going after it, and I thought, this is amazing. My other thought was a little – I was, like, a little scared for him because, like, it's Ontario. I don't know too many great comics that came out of Ontario. But Ontario is a province in Canada for your American listeners, just in case. But main thing to me was, like, I talked to my one friend. I'm like, man, he's really going after it. He wants to be a stand-up comic, and he's trying to do that right now. Instead of going to university, he knew what he wanted, and he went straight for it. And I told this friend of ours who we went to the same high school together, and he said – he's like, well, yeah, what a fucking idiot. Like, why would he waste his time doing that? He's just going to end up like a bum. And like he, from his perspective, he just thought like, what kind of person goes after some sort of cockamamie dream? And in my head, I was just like, it's amazing that he's doing this thing that he really wants to do. Like, he knows what he wants to do with his life, and he's willing to take every chance in the world, forego any education, forego a plan B, and move forward. And he's become successful at that. And I think the other friend was just a little scared because it's not a jump he could make. It's not a system he understood. And he, in his brain, he would panic given the idea of trying to live that way. And to me, I was like,
absolutely.
When I brought this up to my friend, he also said, he's like, yeah, a lot of people have dreams and they give up on those dreams. So then when they see someone going after their dream, they decide they need to put that dream down. They need to crush that dream. They need to minimize it. They need to reduce him because if they go after their dream and succeed and they never went after their dream, well, then they're just a dreamless loser and they don't want to feel
right.
like a dreamless loser.
Right. Absolutely. And Ashton Kutcher said, you know, you can fail at what you hate. So why not try failing at what you love? And it's absolutely accurate, especially if you look at, again, the millennials. So you have all these people with degrees and no job. You know, they did what they thought they were supposed to do, you know, not what they wanted to do. And they're working at McDonald's, but they got a degree in engineering. I got friends right now with degrees in engineering and all kinds of crazy shit. I mean, not something crazy like a liberal arts degree where you know you're not going to get a job. I'm talking about, like, real degrees. And, like, and literally, you know, they're not working in their field. And so, you know, they spent all this time, money, and energy trying to succeed in what they thought they should do, not what they wanted to do, and they're already failing at it. So if you're already going to fail, and I'm not saying that everybody's going to fail, but, you know, why not take the chance of failing at something that you absolutely fucking love? You know, and truth be told, and I think you're a testimony to this, is that when it is something that you love, it's very hard for you to fail at it, because when it's something that you love, it's not work, it's your passion, and you put everything you have into it, and it doesn't feel like it. Like, people ask me all the time, Ashley, how do you work? Like, how do you have time for anything? You know, like, how do you have time for a movie? How do you have time to watch Game of Thrones? Because, like, I'll make a comment about Game of Thrones or whatever. How do you have time for that with you and all the crazy 10 million things you got going on? Because the 10 million things I got going on, it doesn't feel like it literally doesn't feel like work to me, because it's what I love to do. It's I enjoy it. It's like, you know, I wake up and I actually look forward that there is no such thing as a Monday for me. And when people get to that point, they can be successful because they're not spending half their workday on Facebook counting the hours, but they're actually putting in everything they have to it, trying to be the best they can, just like you have with your stories about, you know, trying to stand up and be a better comedian. And that's only helped you become more and more successful. And, you know, I just think you're just such a great motivational story for all of our listeners, you know, what can happen.
Sure. And I was going to say, I think a lot of people are scared of failure. Like, this idea that, like, if I don't go out, like, even my first stand-up set, where the first time I went out, I wasn't amazing. So I thought, well, I should just quit at this. But it's like, you got to realize, you got to invest in failure. Like, it's not going to come easy. Nothing comes easy. And you got to fail every day and every, like, look, I was terrible at calculus in university, but I had to pass the test. So I did calculus every day until it made sense to me. Now I don't remember any of it, of course, but it got me through that
obviously.
Test.
Yeah.
And it's like, but right. At first I had to suck. I had to not understand. I had to figure out how I was going to make those things happen. And eventually that came. I feel like a lot of people sort of feel the same way with their goals, where they're not necessarily willing to, they're like, well, I failed at the first, like, half step of my goal. I might as well quit this goal altogether. It's like, no,
keep failing. Keep failing until you figure out how to succeed, and eventually you will continue to succeed.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So speaking of succeeding, why don't you tell me one of your best moments where you realized, you know, you finally started to get there as a comedian. Like, you know, you told a joke, and instead of you hearing crickets or people throwing rotten tomatoes at you while you're in the stockades, you know, people were actually like, you know what, I could laugh at this guy. Like, I could see this guy again. Like, you had to go through that moment, I'm sure.
I remember, I can't even remember how long ago this was now, but, I had a friend who was, who I think is a brilliant comedian, an amazing comedian. And, we all did an open mic that night, and just it's like the crowd came to specifically boo the comedy show. Like, they hated everyone from the minute they got up. And, I watched my friend go up, who's, I think is, again, is a great comedian. And he just ate a two-hander of a dick. Just like, it was incredibly hard, and I'd never seen him ever have a bad set. So I go up I'm basically shaking before I get to the stage, but, you know, fake it till you make it. I walk up there confidently, I do my set, and people laugh. And maybe it wasn't the most uproarious laughter, but the room didn't boo, they didn't hate me, and they enjoyed themselves. And I was just happy that and a lot of people ate shit that night. I was just happy that, for once, I could make a group of people, I could turn around a crowd, and the show started to go a little better after that. And for comics, like, a lot of comics think, like, oh, I have to crush and I have to destroy, and obviously you want to crush and destroy, but at the same time, it's like, those sort of smaller wins, for me, are how you eventually get to those points. Because no comic started out just killing every time, right?
No, and it's what you're saying? It's always the small wins. So...
Yeah.
With me, I could tell you specifically the moment that I realized this is what I was gonna do for the rest of my life. I won't get into the crazy story, but it was a very successful moment with a student that had no success in his life, and watching that smile on his face. It was a really cool thing. And, you know, I used to always think, like, teachers were, you know, those who can't, and, you know, they always had this, but I realized there was something to it. But I feel like everybody has that moment, and it's really unique to each of the individuals, because if you think you're just going to be like, oh, I want to be, you know, a movie producer, that everybody on the planet's going to jump in and support you, you're wrong. And the thing is, you know, you're going to go through life where you're going to fail and fail, and people are going to make fun of you, and people are going to talk shit about you, and people are going to wonder why you're not working in the mill or whatever. You know, and all this stuff and all this judgment, but eventually you're going to get to that point in your life where where somebody gets it, where somebody recognizes what you're doing and sees the value in it, whether it's you turning that crowd or as me and that first student that just, you know, that I realized it completely changed his life, or, you know, the basketball player that makes the winning shot. Everybody, I feel like, always has that turning moment, and it always comes at a unique time too, where you're just like, you feel like it's monotonous, you're going an uphill battle that you're never going to win, and then, you know, the universe just always seems to provide you that one little moment where you're just like, this is what I needed, you know? And it's interesting, because that gives you the power to continue to drive on, and the more that you drive on, the more those moments seem to become prevalent. And it just kind of snowballs you into the successful mindset. And but it all starts with you just going, admitting to yourself, look, I'm not going to make any money. My life's going to suck. Everybody's going to hate me. Okay, let's do this.
Yeah. No, you can't care about other people's opinions. Like, I used to think that. I used to think to myself, like, I don't really care what other people think. But I didn't realize until I started this that I really can't anymore. Like, I don't even have the time to give a shit about what other people think, because – it doesn't matter. What matters is what I want to do, how I want to move forward, and what I want for my life. Like, if other people don't think this is a safe move, like that friend that I told you about in that earlier story, well, honestly, like, I hope they learn to think better or change their mind, but fuck them, because I gotta do this for me. It's not for anybody else. And if maybe they can't see themselves doing that, I can see myself doing this, and that's all that matters. Like, a lot of the time people forget that it's like, well, it's me first. You can't really worry about what your parents think or what your girlfriend thinks or whatever thinks. If they don't support you, they don't have to support you. You have to support you. And then eventually you'll find those people that want to support you.
At the end of the day, and this is, like, really morbid of me, but at the end of the day, those people are going to die. And when your parents die and you still have 30 years of your life left, like, what was it for? Now you hate 30 years of your life and you don't have anybody to try and validate it to. But what's next for you? I mean, so you've reached these awesome points. People are laughing. You know, things are going great in your career. You had some really good spotlight moments. I mean, what's your next big goal or achievement that you're trying to work towards?
Right now, I host Amateur Night at Yuck Yucks in London here. And I am actually, I kind of achieved the goal that I wanted to, sort of a small goal for push forward. But I started out, right now, I do the Amateur Night at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. But luckily, we've had, our shows have been really successful, and we're actually going to move to our own day. We're going to get a Thursday slot now, and we'll actually have a night show, so people can bring dates and those things. And we'll hopefully start setting up pro shows and being able to move sort of in a different direction. Like, we have a lot of amateurs in London trying to move forward, a lot of people. And we're sort of, the hope is that we can sort of provide a place in London where those amateurs can sort of get that next level experience. And for me, my goal, I guess, right now would be to eventually go to JFL to do the Just for Laughs Festival, to eventually get signed by Yuck Yucks, get signed by Absolute, sort of just move forward as a comedian, do everything I can to make sure that this is my day job from now on and I don't have to work that other job. I love that other job, but I want to follow my passion, and this is more of my passion than my day job. So,
Absolutely. Well, man, I really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you for the wonderful talk, your insight, and best of luck to you. I mean, you're doing a hell of a job so far.
Thank
and,
you,
you know, it's just, oh, absolutely. And it's just, you know, it's just such a wonderful thing for me to be in a world where men are so confused and they don't know, like, if they should praise women or run away from women or be successful or apologize for being successful. I mean, it's so fucking confusing, you know, and just seeing someone that's like, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to do what I love and I'm going to be successful at it, and you're growing and you're becoming more successful. More power to you. And again, thank you for being on the show. So for everybody else, appreciate you listening in on the show tonight. And our excellent guest has a lot of surprises coming your direction. I'm not going to tell you
Absolutely.
What they are just yet. I'm going to leave you in suspense, but stay tuned to our social network, and we will be slowly releasing the surprises and some of the his future plans that he hasn't mentioned just now to you. So you could be a part of that, be part of the adventure, be part of his growth, and be part of the movement here at the Modern Gentleman Program on Modern Gentleman Mondays. Had a lot of fun. Thanks again for stopping by, and we will see you all next week.